What up? What up? What's going
Love
on with
Talk
you?
Radio.
Big Beef in the Funk Files. What's good? What's good? It's Big Beef in the Funk Files. Where you at, Shot?
Right here, man. I'm right here. You know, I wanna definitely take some time out to talk about some of the issues that's going on.
Most definitely, brother.
I want y'all first to understand. Killing cops is not. That's the first one. That's the first part of our message. The last part. I made my statement 30 on YouTube. I think we need to remember that it's respond like it. Go ahead.
Are you? Oh, okay, yeah. I think we'd be remiss not to address this terrible tragedy that's been happening around the country, and it hasn't just happened in Baton Rouge, and it just happened in Minnesota, and it hasn't just happened in Dallas. It's happening all around and across the United States. And I was just addressing this issue earlier with a good friend of mine, and he didn't understand. He was, you know, he's a Caucasian brother, and he didn't understand, you know, that black mothers and fathers have had to teach their kids how to conduct themselves in order to maintain their safety when it comes to dealing with the police, you know, specifically. And to him, it was just outrageous. And to, I guess, a lot of other Caucasian brothers and sisters out there, it's outrageous and egregious that we have to deal with these types of things in America in 2016. So what it says to me is that we have not made the progress that people have, you know, some people think that we've made, and we are not on a equality basis with Caucasian brothers and sisters. We're not there yet, and we're far from it. Until, you know, the police department is able to get some type of diversity in their training and dealing with minorities, you know, this is going to continue to happen. This fear that they have, and I was just alerted to that by a friend that I've been friends with for over 30 years. That, you know, there's an issue with the pigment of the skin, and he was saying that he feared darker complected brothers. They were, especially if they're darker and big, that is just immediate fear. And I just didn't really understand that. And I wanted to know if you could shed some light on that yourself. Can you shed some light on that one, Charlie?
Basically, it goes back to, and I hate to keep repeating this, but you have to remember the time in this country for us goes back to slavery. It doesn't stop from coming back to that. The darker skin brothers, the ones that work, the lighter ones in the house, the darker ones in the field. So the darker ones were always more angry. You know, contrary to belief, Africans in this country were bred. The bigger they were, the bigger, the stronger they are. The more pot cotton they could pick, the more people. So, and that breeding is seen today in our absence. A lot of brothers in our neighborhood. So the fear goes back to the bigger the guy, the blacker the guy, the more angrier he is. All of this has to stop and change. But it's not going to happen.
Right.
Like, I want it back here. And the only thing that's changed is that we get treated a little more differently for this.
Exactly.
But we also have to stop. 93% of the crimes committed in our community are by us, to us, stop. We got to stop this point with the cops. We are killing ourselves at an alarming rate. And we have to get educated. And I stated this earlier. One, the system works. We just have to know what the system is and how it works. If you're having a problem, go meet with your congressman, your senators, your political leaders. If the mayor doesn't want to meet with you, or the police chief, or the fire chief, or even the board of education, they don't want to meet with you, come back with 10 friends. 10 angry friends. Come back with 10 friends. They don't want to meet with you. Come back with 10 more. This time, make sure you call the media. The problem is we have to start creating jobs. And yes, the police have some very serious issues. And it's racism embedded. And there's this blue wall that's a problem. But we have a black wall that's a problem because we'll get mad when the cops do something else, which we should, and hold them accountable. But we won't tell the cops who robbed us because we're too scared that Ray Ray's going to come back and get us. We want the police to protect our community, but you can't go out and say we're going to kill every cop. We've got to make some changes, and we've got to start patrolling our neighborhood, educating our children, taking some time and some money out, creating some jobs. That's real talk. You know, I tell these athletes that are friends of mine, entertainers, businessmen, you know, you guys are out popping bottles and making poopers. That money you spend on that, you could be spending to buy Whole Foods stores or those homies that you're hanging out with, you paying them to hang out with you, instead of paying them to hang out with you, why don't you help pay for the tuition, go to college, so they have a chance to do something. We have to take an investment, and we have to do it ourselves. We have to start putting banks in our system. Our bank, not being racist, the prejudice. The Japanese have their own bank, the Jews have their own bank, even the Latins have their own bank, the Arabs have their own bank. We ain't go party with Bank of America, but I'm not mad at Bank of America or any other federal institution. But we have enough money in our community to start building our own. And we have to get back to building our own. If we don't, we're going to continue going down. Really start.
Most definitely. If I could just jump in for a second, I believe that in our quest to assimilate, we've lost ourselves and believing that we are truly equal. In a sense of equality in the United States of America, being treated the same as a white person, you know, and being able to attain the same job as a white person or live in the same place as a white person. And because some of us that have made it out, we've lost that goal that we used to have, which was to be self-sufficient. And not dependent upon their dollars, because the black dollar is a very important dollar. It makes billions. And so, with that said, if we could just step our game up and go back to grassroots, I mean, we had that. There was such a thing as Black Wall Street. We had that, and we allowed it to dissipate for some whatever reasons. You know that why it went away, but it's our due. Yes. And now it's our
so
we need to do our due diligence.
We don't support each other's business. We don't. You know, I'm going to say this, and I love my people. We're very quick to say if somebody black does bad business, say I'm not doing no more business. But if somebody
exactly.
of another race or color does something to us, we don't never say I'm not going to do business with that. I'm just saying we're not going to do business with that. You know, quite the whole race. We got to work together. We got to talk. We got to work with our Asian brothers, our Latin brothers, our Jewish brothers and sisters, our Indians, our indigenous, our Muslim brothers and sisters. We have to sit down, and our white brothers. We have to sit down and we have to talk. We have to start building our community, which means to come together and meet. And we
That's
need
real
to talk.
Talk.
Malcolm X said, without black unity, you don't have black power. No.
Exactly. And I saw a young brother on Facebook, and he was I understood he was in a rage over the situation that has been happening, and he was telling brothers to arm themselves, get, you know, bear arms, legally bear arms, and shoot them like they shooting us. And I was like, man, I understood his rage, but I was like, no, brother, that's not the way. We cannot revert to that violence, because that's only going to lose more black lives. And that's just not the way to get it done. We can do it in a peaceful manner, and we can learn to love and get along with all of us, you know, together as one. We can work with each other, but it's going to take some real frank conversation, if you know what I'm saying. It's going to take some real frank conversation. That means people that are in the wear the blue uniform with the badge on them, on their chest, are going to have real frank conversations with the people that police you know, they police our communities. And so therefore they need to understand if they if we can build a bridge where everyone can walk across it and when everyone can fellowship, they can and there be healthy dialogue, a lot of these killings will stop because they'll understand that we want the same things they want. You know, we just want to live good.
We want
to attain the same. Exactly. We want the same thing. We want to raise our children in a safe society. That's what we want. And so, and I don't think that's something that we can't have. And, you know, when we real with the situation, and I know this is something that I don't want to, you know, scream on it too much, but the fact is the facts. We don't own planes and we don't own ships like that to bring in these narcotics into our neighborhoods. We don't. So someone is bringing it in, and I know they know who's bringing it in. And, you know, we can put a stop to a lot of the violence that's taking place. And instead of putting the drugs in the neighborhoods and in the projects, let's put some opportunity in the projects and get some jobs, some job training, create some job training centers and things of that nature.
And we're actually working on a program here at Culture Street called Money Wise. We're teaching young kids how to go over the bank account, be more educated about the tax, be more educated about what's going on in your community, Money Wise. But what you have to do at the same time is, you know, those same problems when you were a struggling athlete and then you got that multi-million-dollar contract or that platinum record and you moved out of your neighborhood, those problems were the same.
Exactly.
We got to go back. We got to put money in our people. And I'm not going to lean on this too tough because I made a pretty strong statement earlier this week. The representative station. And I hope our community, not just the black, but all of our unified. But we just wanted to speak on this real briefly and let you guys know that we are watching. We are here. We are Culture Zine is an urban culture radio. And it's meant to talk.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But we want to definitely be able to leave things to be open. If you want to call, please call in 646-668-8287. We'll be here all night. We're going to be playing music. Please call us. You can always email us at coachesinradio@gmail.com. And somebody on the staff will definitely answer it. But you can hit me directly at Shaki Abdul, shakijiabdul@coachesin.com. I'm the owner and the founder of the station, so I definitely take this very personally. We're going to get to business and hopefully get you guys to really ease up and have a little fun and realize that we've got to smile along the way. Tonight our show is basically in partnership with the Culture Zine. And we're very proud of that relationship. We had Dave Webb on last week. This is Beef Show. So from here out, you won't hear me much unless I'm talking about the back history of some of this music. But this is Big Beef Show. And we talked about this, and we wanted to definitely make some conversation, man. I wanted to play something for you, man. I wanted to play this song by Cameo called Funk Funk. And tell me what you think about this. Again, call it Culture Zine Radio, where urban culture lives.
Captain, the transport is ready.
That's it. Lieutenant Marbot, what is the condition of the planet's surface?
It is difficult to be precise. However, my instruments indicate a condition of extreme rigor mortis spreading rapidly throughout the population. Highly illogical, Captain.
A bunch of stiffs, huh? Well, set coordinates for Chaka City and have a landing party of 9 men beamed down immediately with phases set on Funk Funk.
Very well, Captain Smirk.
Eternal Funk, alias the Formaldehyde Funkman. You can't see us, but you can feel us.
Get up,
get up.
Feel it.
on the cameo sound. Will to let you know that we exist, so don't resist, let it all hang out. Don't be a dead boogie, baby. You dig my heavy drift, my drift's too hip to resist. To get off on is a trip.
Man, that was very funky, my brother. I was very funky. As a matter of fact, it had me in here slapping my stomach like I had a bass guitar. You feel me? It was that funky.
And that's what this is about, man. When you created this show, I wanted to definitely make sure I matched the funky attitude you wanted to bring. That was off of Cameosis, the cameo album Cameosis. And I like that. It's the song before rigor mortis, but I had to leave the stuff off with that, man. We're going to get funky. Let's talk about funk.
Man, let's get it funky, man. This is Big Beef in the Funk Files of y'all Culture Zine Radio. Why don't you give us a call at 646-668-8287. That's 646-668-8287. Let's get it.
I got something for you. I got something for you. Everybody thinks it's the James Brown song, but this is actually a Bobby Bird song. And this is I Know You Got Soul. This is actually Bobby Bird. James is on it, but Bobby recorded this. Check it out.
Rolling, I Know You Got Soul. One, two, three, hit it.
You got it, you got it, you got it, you got it. I know you got soul. Hey, if you didn't win being here,
Promise you that. I mean, it took me right back, man, to 1972, 1973, when I was a young buck, and I was watching, you know, watching Mama and them get it in the living room doing the bump and whatnot. You know what I mean? You feel me? I was right there. I mean, I pictured my mama with the Angel Flight pants on, with the big afro. You know what I mean? Everybody bumping in the kitchen and whatnot, doing the thing. when the times were good. You know, that's what it took me right back to there, man. I mean, I done messed around and got my sciatica acting up now. I don't know what's going on. I know they say it's sciatica, but I call it sciatica because it's my back and my ass. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you know, James say funk heal.
Man. He say funk heal?
James say if you let the funk heal, it'll heal you.
Let the funk heal you.
No, that's actually James Brown's band, which is, you know, I played it because it is James Brown's band. Bobby was his, like, his brother. And funny story how Bobby got his name is they were doing the Philadelphia Spectrum, and they were playing the music. And James would always play this game with him and Bobby would run through the audience. And James would count it off, and they'd run, stage and run, and see who could make it to the top. Well, James didn't cue Bobby. He just took off. And Bobby took off after him. James made it to the top. You know, like a movie theater, he made it to the top. Bobby Bird got caught, and the crowd ripped his clothes off. And all he had was his collar around his neck, his suspenders, and his socks and shoes on, and his boxers. And they threw him up back up on the stage. And he was flying and screaming like a bird. By the time he had hit the stage face first, James was back up on stage singing. And that's why they called him Bobby Bird. He was running through the lines of the air, squawking like a bird. So they called him Bobby Bird.
A little history lesson in it all, huh, in the funk.
There's always lessons in the funk, man.
Man, I feel it, brother. I feel it.
I'm going to play some stuff for you that a lot of cats don't know. You ever heard of a group called the Memphis Horns?
You know what? I have heard of it, but I've never really heard their music. I can say that. I ain't never heard the music, but I have heard of them.
The Memphis Horns was a group that was around the same time James Brown was out, Little Richard in the 50s. And it was a cat named King Creole, and he was actually the sax player for a lot of the rock guys. And he created this horn section, which later became Fred Wesley, Parliament. They became part of James Brown's band, actually. They were called the Horny Horns when they became part of Parliament. I'm going to break this for you right now, man. Tell me what you think. This is about 58. Tell me what you think. man. You got to call us.
Man, I'm telling you, brother, that was so funky. That was so very funky. Matter of fact, it's so funky, I'm in here burning incense right now. That's how funky that was.
You got to
call us. It smelled like chillings up in here. That's how funky it was, brother. It was that funky. I mean, that took me back again. That was like some real grassroots funk.
That's what we're doing over here. 5546, you're on.
What's happening? What's happening? What's going on tonight?
Hey, what's going on, my brother? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm calling from out of Detroit, listening to that funk, man, taking me back to the, you know, like I got the George Clinton in my back pocket.
Man.
Y'all that don't know, this is John Robinson. He's the marketing director and the VP over at Coaches Eat. What's up, brother?
Oh, man, what's happening, boss? You already know.
Man, we just trying to play this funk, man. You know, trying to wake up some of these bones, some of these old bones, as Parliament would say. So, trying to rattle some of these bones in the club.
Well, man, by all means, you know, let them know about that funk calling out of Detroit. Shout out to George Clinton. Gave me a lot of inspiration and a lot of talks when he was in the studio. And rest in peace to the brother that just passed away from the group. And, you know, you got to keep it going for him and all of them that need to know about this funk, man.
Definitely shout out.
Let me ask you a question, brother.
We'll be definitely missed. Hold on, man. We got another caller.
All right.
Jump in.
Funk Five with Big Beef.
Hey, Shot with Ron.
What's up, Ron? This is Ron Washington. This is the brother that does the history of the jazz stuff on Saturdays for us. What's up, my brother? We woke up that funk in you?
Well, you know, I came from the school of funk, so you know James Brown and Little Richard and all them cats was my heroes. So you know if it's about the funk, you know it's about Parliament. You know it's about all them funky cats out of Ohio. You know they funky. And you know we got funk everywhere in this country, so I'm in.
I hear you, man. Hopefully you brothers can stay with us. I know you're on a different time zone, John, but hopefully you stay with us for a while, man. We're going to just talk about funk and how funk was influenced. And this is Big Beef. This is his show. He came up with this idea. I think it's amazing. We're doing it in a partnership with the Funk Center, right, bro?
That's right, bro. Right, what's going on with you? This is Big Beef. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. Real good. Gonna do that jazz thing on Saturday, but you know, funk was my thing, brother. I was listening to stuff back in the 60s with Parliament and Funkadelic and Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow and Maggot Brain.
He went to
Maggot Brain. That's my I gotta listen to that guitar riff at least four times a year,
Rock, that really was amazing, yeah. I got a question for y'all, brother. How many of y'all remember Pleasure?
Oh, man, I definitely do.
Or groups like Soul Searchers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
now you're talking.
Yeah.
You know, so I got a couple of them on deck, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to play something that all y'all remember. And I definitely want y'all to tell me what y'all remember about the song once I play it. And
well, let's get it funky.
I think I'm gonna play it.
Yeah, yeah.
Y'all should know the song when you first heard it. Shook 'em.
looking for. Don't tell me now.
I'm just going to have to talk over this because this song is funky, and I need y'all opinion on this. What y'all think?
Oh, brother.
Oh, brother, you kidding me?
George, forgive me, but this is the Funk Files, and I got to let this brother Steve and brother Ron over here explain this stuff. I'm just the DJ. I'm just playing music.
Well, you know, back in the day when James Brown was doing his thing, all them cats was with Brown, and they felt that funk from Brown, and they went on their own and got their own thing going. And George Clinton and all them cats, man, they had it going on. Parliament. Now,
yeah.
All over the years, they've developed their own culture, their own funk. Now, by the way, I was just talking to Poo Poo Man, Gene Anderson, up in Vegas. Just last week. That's one of my boys. And, you know, he was there for a long time. I Diaper Man and all them cats. And I hung out with Fred Wesley back in 75 and the Horny Horns and them cats.
I was just telling him how the Memphis Horns was where Fred Wesley started, end up merging. You know, James and them were very smart. They would book shows with James Brown, and they would do the Davies, and they would do Parliament, and they would do Parliament, and Funkenstein, and it was all one group. It'd be like 30 groups, and it'd be one group. And they'd get 30
groups. Yeah, it was a gang of them, brother. it was an army.
How many groups were born out of James Brown's band, would you say?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Parliament, Rise of Funkenstein, Bootsy, George Booty and the Booty People, Funkadelic, and then George himself, and then you got the Jungle.
Oh, you had all kind of guys
Davies.
Come up out of that. Oh, man,
you know, even the horn section had their own group, the Horny Horns. You know, they just, man, but Roger did the same thing, too.
You lit? Lynn Collins came up out of there too, by the way. She was right there with Brown. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, brother. Let me ask a question real quick. What would you say? This is Big Beef. I'm hollering at you about, I want to know, in your opinion, where do you think funk derived from? Where did it actually come from? What was the whole concept behind funk music?
Well, actually, funk is a derivative of rhythm, blues, and jazz. It came from the bottom beat off the one, blues with a rhythm to it, and then they added in some of the riffs in the middle. They clogged up the middle. They left a lot of holes in it, and that's why you hear all the funk. That's where the funk is, off the rhythm. And that's where
came
from. Yeah, it's a derivative. It was a great guys like you got to look at guys like Bo Diddley and them cats, man. They was the first guys, Little Richard and and them cats, man, they had a funky, and they it derived actually from there. And the Brews was really right in the middle. And Bo Diddley, y'all don't front on Bo Diddley. Bo Diddley was funky as all get out, for real. And oh yeah, so you had a history of a derivative from jazz, R&B, and blues.
Right, right.
And out came the funk.
And out came the funk, and that's how the funk was born.
Oh yeah. And I go back to Say It Loud.
Go ahead, brother.
I was saying you had Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud back in 66. Was really one of the first rap funk tunes out there, because he was really funky. I mean, Brown was just off the hook in 66. So you had this mixture, this R&B, and then you had your boy up in San Francisco way, Larry Graham and Sly Stone. They were some first cats that came out with some real heavy funk, you know. And then you had that Bay Area sound up there. The boys, they were rough, because I lived in the Bay for many years. And the funk came through all of them cats, man. The Ohio players and all that Ohio sound was just incredible. I tell you who else was right there with them. The Isley Brothers. The Isley Brothers the front end of it when they hit It's Your Thing. Yeah, all these funky tunes. The Meters.
And Otis Redding and them, you know, they were driving that southern funk. So, you know, I have a question for you. How important do you think the turbulence into the 50s, going into the 60s, helped to drive this funk sound? You know, as it progressed through the 60s and into the 70s, it was a lot more freer. But a lot of the groups we're talking about, you know, get recognized for their 70s. They were doing stuff in the late 50s, early 60s before they really, and they were doing this funk. How much do you think civil rights and the turbulent times of the 60s and 70s influenced this music?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I was there. That's my era. And they were saying a lot, man. Curtis Mayfield out of Chicago, one of my relatives, was just incredible. He was driving it. And you had guys making statements, political statements in the song, Fight the Power. You had so many other people out there, man, making statements politically in the 60s. It helped people stay attuned. People had to have something to hang on to, and the music was it. We made our radio stations and black stations in the 60s kept people alive. It kept people vibrant. It gave people some hope to live forward and to live in not in fear. You had so we had a unique opportunity to speak to each other. We weren't speaking to each other. Then the music itself,
and y'all gave a lot of messages, coding messages, about what was going on, rallies and things like
Marvin. Marvin Gaye with What's Going On, 1971. You had so many artists were speaking to the people through their music in the 70s and the 60s. It helped us survive the oppressive state of mind that we were under at that time. And it helped the people, the kids had something to hold on to. We had something, they were saying something. Like, I tell you, I love Chuck D, because Chuck D is one of my favorites. Because he's one of the founders of that sound. The love that was coming through Chuck and them cats, man. You know, so our music has been our statement in the world scene And that's why it's so important for us to give a positive image to the world, that we are strong and united amongst ourselves. We have to relinquish killing one another and help one another, love one another. Black men are only 12% of this country. We're seeing young black men dying every day in this country. That's the problem that we have to solve. We got to solve this hate, this rage and anger that goes back to slavery up to today. We got to solve that. We got to let that go. We got to learn how to love one another.
Most definitely, brother, you're speaking the truth, for sure.
And respect one another. Because without love and respect, there can be no hope for our future, for our generation. And that's what we have to develop. And I'm hoping that all black men, all men, period, can hear the cry of those who understand the need for unity amongst the people. Our women are fighting the wars for us. They're the ones out on the front line. They're the ones that are out there on the front line, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. Black men are in prison. More black men across this country need to take stock of that and relinquish that lifestyle and come back to the family and redefine the family, what the family really means. That's what we need to do, because without a father that's going to raise his son and his daughter, we don't have a family. And that's what we have to do.
Me and Beef were talking about that earlier, particularly.
Michelle was, man. He reiterating everything that we spoke about earlier, brother. I mean, you are speaking.
You know, they come from that generation, and we don't know, because we were too young to be fighting in the 60s. And I tell these kids, you guys don't understand how dangerous these words are that y'all saying. This can really get bad, and you guys have to find a better way. And we've got to deal with it a different way, because dealing with it angrily, out of emotion or frustration, is killing us. And, you know, I don't mean to harp on this, but we've got to do what the word community means, to come together in unity and talk, work this out, because the path that's being chosen, not what we need.
No,
I got stuff
no.
Oh, most definitely. And I also think, if I could jump in for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
I would like to say that the one of the main issues is parenting. You know, a lot of our sisters are struggling, you know, in single-parent families. The kids is home alone by themselves, so the street is raising the kids while the mama is you know, at the job. And so
there's
a lot of, you know, there's a lot of latchkey kids. We call them, I was a product of that, latchkey kid. And so we don't have the, you know, the concept of, you know, it takes a village to raise our kids. So we are afraid now to police each other's kids now. You know, you can't say, no, that ain't your baby. You know, that ain't none of your daddy. You know, you can't say nothing to these kids. And that is a major problem today in today's society, when you see, you know, young black kids, you know, out in public acting up, and you say something to them to remind them of who they are, that they're better than that, and they'll tell you something in a minute, like, hey, you're not my mom, you're not my dad, who are you, you know, to tell me anything. So that whole concept, it takes a village, that's something that we definitely need to hold on to. We need to, you know, we need to get that back.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. The problem that we have in this last 20, 30 years is the fact that the society has allowed the woman to be stratified in the family, and she now is the breadwinner, the head of the household individually with so much burden. I feel so hurt for a family just last week where a sister killed all four of her children. And that was the saddest thing I've heard in a long time. But she lost hope, and these were little ones. These were young ones, 2, 3, 5, and 4. I think another one was 6 years old. Yes, the sister just lost it. She saw no hope, no way out, no end results, no light at the end of the tunnel for her children in their future. And she just ended it right there. And that's so, so tragic that our sisters are raising these children by themselves, and the burden of the and the pain of raising a child has taken so much out of the woman till no longer can she stand alone. She had to take the lives of her children. Now, that's a sad state of affairs that we have experienced in this country. And this is not, and I'm not talking about, I'm talking maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks at the most.
It was about a week ago, yeah.
So I'm saying to you brothers and sisters in the listening audiences out here, come back to you yourselves. Love one another. If you can't love them, don't hurt them. That's our future. And we must do it. We don't have any option. We just don't. If there were an option, we would all know about it. But the family is the basis of society. And our family has been torn apart. And the economics and the streets of America have been running with blood far too long with our own young children. When it goes down to the point to where 6 years old are killing each other, that is a sad state of affairs. Too sad. So I don't know what to say other than I hope that the Lord, the creator of all life, can hear the cries of these people that need the guidance and the help that is needed here today. We need it. We need it desperately.
Oh, most definitely, brother. I mean, those are some very, very strong words. And, you know, hopefully those words can be, you know, reiterated throughout our communities. We need that. We need some wisdom. We need some youth to hear some of this wisdom so that they can spread it to the younger ones. And, you know, we got to be able to take heed and listen to the brothers that have been there in the times, because I remember, you know, I'm born in 66, so I'm not that vast in it, such as yourself, but I respect it, and I know the fight that you guys fought before me. So I respect all the struggle that our black men have gone through, our black men and sisters have gone through, you know, throughout our history. So, you know, those words are very, very strong and resonate.
Well, I appreciate that. You were born right in the most turbulent times of this country in the 60s. And I remember I was a freshman in high school in 68. And that's the year Martin Luther King taken away from us. And that was before him was John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Medgar Evers and our dear brother who left us, Malik El Haq Shabazz, Malcolm X, left us in 65. So that was a turbulent time in our history, and we need to look upon our lives, man. We have to start reflecting. And if we can't do something positive to people, don't do anything that's going to take us back. The young man down in Dallas just last week, 25 years old, had enough at 25.
Yes.
And he decided enough was enough. Well, I tell him, what I would tell him if I were his father, son, you haven't seen enough. You haven't seen enough. And you need to understand that life has many more doors to open for you if you will allow them. And you go a different way. Go another path. Don't take the lives of the innocent. Regardless of if your brain is there's always room for more. We human beings are so very, very, very fragile. but yet we're so very strong and very unique. And we have to live with our uniqueness of being one of the next step to the celestial. And we have to understand that every life is precious on this planet. That's why I don't understand why so many people have put themselves above and put others below. That's a problem. The respect that every man needs on this planet was given to him the moment he came into the creation. We need to respect one another, and that's what the word is. We have to respect life. And the policemen who took those innocent lives, they should pay for what they've done, for sure. But we as a people need to be strong enough in order to overcome. We've overcome so much. Let me give you another good example. And I know you brothers are familiar with that scene down in South Carolina, that where the young white gentleman took 9 lives at that church down in South Carolina.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, let me tell you how it affected me personally. The second pastor, there was a pastor that was in that congregation that got taken away from us. Well, that gentleman actually married my daughter. He presided over my daughter's wedding 3 years ago. And my daughter called me, and she was quite distraught about it. And I understood. Now, just think about it. I'm all the way in across the country. People have been affected all across the country and across the globe by one lack of respect of life. So we have to respect life, regardless of what we want or not. There are many, many more enemies that we have to deal with than to come to a rally or come to a theater or come to the street, somewhere in the streets, and take another human being's life as if it were nothing. We have to value life much more than we do. We must.
For certain.
And that's all I can say, brother. I've said my piece. I'm so sorry to take your time, but some things have to be said.
Brother, because
we started the show out like this. We started the show with the same conversation, and I planned to end the show with the same conversation. And so, you know, y'all have to understand, I've probably known y'all both maybe equally about the same time, maybe beef a little more. But this is a conversation that we need to have. And I haven't told anybody this, but I've been working on a show called The Black Man's Forum, and I think I'm going to do that and have us where we can call in and talk about our community and make sure that we get a chance to sit down and talk about things with, to, for, even against each other if we have to, but we've got to talk. So this isn't just a music channel. I'm trying to take this station back to the 60s where you were talking about we had community radio stations. They dealt with community issues. That's what we want. We want to make our worldwide audience feel as if this is their community too, and we have to speak about things in our community. So,
most definitely, man.
Music and culture.
Problem with the lack of respect for life, and that's just not only in the United States, that's all over the world right now.
That's the world. That's right.
I just saw something right now flashed on the news. 80 just killed in France, but 80
yes.
in a terror attack right now. I mean, tragic. I mean, it's now sad when we get to a place where that didn't shock me right now. To see that did
right.
not shock me. I was just like, okay. So it's almost like you become numb, you know, and that's a problem when it becomes regular, when this type of thing becomes mm-hmm. regular, because it's a tragedy. It really is, you know, and I don't know where this movement is coming from to, in order to get your point across, is to take life. That's just wrong. That's the wrong concept.
Yes, it's something that's exactly correct, and that's what man has to take account, and the leaders of these countries and the leaders of these organizations, these people who want to, you know, rule the world and whatever, you know, those are the people that have to take responsibility just as well as the common everyday man. Because remember, we live under governed laws of all these countries, and all these countries should have control over their people, and to punish the adverse society, and to stratify the good, and to bring people into harmony. All men should have a chance to live and to prosper and to have a family and to love. All men. Doesn't matter about color. Doesn't matter about what country. It's a human thing.
All children should have the chance to dream. All children should have the chance to dream and fulfill those dreams.
And we have to get up and do something. And I'm one of action. I love action. I love to see action. But, you know, there's, for every action, there's always a reaction.
A reaction, most definitely.
And that's what we have to deal with in this life, is the reaction to the good. What is it that makes man so hardened toward another human being? Is it because of the lifestyle, or because of society, or many lean on religion and philosophies change the way we look at life? And that's a problem, because we can't, we didn't come here to be something. We came here as human beings, unbeknownst to all things, and we had to grow into them, whatever that was, as humans. And our parenting, like you, that brother was so correct. Parenting and leadership is so very important to lead the people in the right and proper and a good direction that will allow us all to live in harmony.
You ain't lying, brother. That is the truth in so many words. It's the truth. And until we can understand that, we lost. You know, until we can understand it, we just lost. And it's a very sad time. So I don't know. I really don't understand or how to make a difference other than to have healthy dialogue. And you know, a person to me told me today, I don't know what's the purpose of in a march. You know, marching don't do nothing. And I said, I don't think that's true. I think that what it does do is that it brings the attention to the matter at hand. It gives people an opportunity to see that there's many that are standing against what it is that's happening. So yeah, you know, for me, you know, it does make a difference. You know, I believe that we can get some things accomplished when we march, and we decide to take things, you know, in our hands in a peaceful manner, and not in a nonviolent manner. I believe the show is up, brother. Tune in.
No, we got some time. Just give us some background music, some talking music, man.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, what I want to know is, you know, what can we do, in your opinion? What do you think we should do to continue this healthy, you know, this healthy path to get some resolve in this country?
Well, there's two things that we need to do. We need to open up channels and dialogue to the community at large. We must be able to bring our views of unity, love, compassion, and values, and start bringing the educated as well as the undereducated, the ones who've been left out of society, need to be brought into dialogue so that they can learn how to express themselves verbally as well as making some type of real fulfill their statements as a human being. Because, see, what the key is you, when you don't have an inclusive society, you have a segregated group of people who feel no value whatsoever. So their value of life goes down. And what we have to do, we have to bring the values up. Something that the churches, something that the country should be doing is to bring the value of the human life up and make people feel more valuable, that their voice counts. Many times we just don't feel that we count in life, that we've been left out. Those are the ones who gain attention by doing things that are adverse to our society. If we bring them into the society as with love and compassion and all the humanness that we can, then that's where mankind begins to feel worth something. And that's what we have to do. We have to make an effort to bring those who've been excluded into a more inclusive standpoint, as opposed to, oh, he's over there and I can't talk to him because he doesn't have the education that I have, or he doesn't have the money that I have, or he doesn't look like me, or his skin is darker than mine, or his skin is lighter than mine, or he went to a Catholic church, or he went to a Protestant church. We have to break those barriers. We have to really seriously consider an all-inclusive society as opposed to a segregated one that now, as we can see, has created rage and anger and fear and hostility. And those are the things that we're experiencing right now because we've been so segregated. We have to try to create a movement that will include man and not exclude him. That's what I think we should do.
Definitely, brother. Definitely. There's words of wisdom for sure. And I definitely believe. But how do we get those words to our younger people, our younger folk that they don't seem to, they seem to really lost their way? I had a professor when I was in college in Cal State San Bernardino by the name of Dr. Cordell Briggs, and he told me once they eliminated African-American studies in the high school and devalued it and made it an elective instead of a recognized course where you would get an accredited course, he said, then black children would stop taking the black history because it was devalued and they wouldn't receive the credits any longer. So therefore, since they devalued it, he said, at some point in time, he said, you will see a radical change in young black America. And he said, you'll see it. You'll see the evidence of it. And I believe that's what we're seeing now. And that was in 1989 when he told me this.
Well, you know, you hit a very important point. I remember when I was in college in the 80s there, I was at... I'm a late bloomer, but nonetheless, I bloom.
That's
and,
all right.
In 85, 86, I was under Dr. Cecilia Arrington at Merritt College in Oakland. And she actually was the lady who petitioned the state college system and Cal Berkeley, by the way, to allow black history to be an elective that is just as equal to American history. So, and she was quite successful. It actually happened, and in the state of California, you can actually take black history, and it would count just as many credits as it would in the American history class. So what we need to do, we need to call upon all the educators, these and history. Now we have more educated people in our community than we've ever had. We need to call upon all of those educated people in the critical areas of our community, history, science, math, especially history, to petition every state in this country to mandate that African American history and African history be taught in the elementary schools, in the grade, in the junior high schools, the high schools, and the colleges. And I guarantee you, if that was something that could be accomplished, then this country would take at least 180 degree turn away from where they're at now, because they would see the value. When you read all these books, these textbooks, and you're reading history, his story is not your story. You have a different story, and that's what we have to promote, is our story about our people, and give the youth from the ages of kindergarten all the way through college the opportunity to study about himself, study the history of all the wonderful things that African Americans have done since they came here and before, okay, all the way back to Africa, and all the way through the journey through slavery, ultimately through the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, now we're in 2000s. We need to teach these kids when they're babies. It's just the same principle that the Jewish faith does, the Catholic faith does, the Italian, the Chinese, Japanese. They all have a story that they teach to themselves. That's how the pride comes up. But it's not taught to young black children. So our values are not there, and our men are not teaching their children the story. So we got to do that. That's one thing I think would be necessary.
Oh, definitely. The place of which where I work at, I heard a young person, a young person. I mean, I'm talking about 15 years old, and I'd never heard Dr. King referred to as this, but I won't say the exact word he used. But he said, he heard a speech on the radio, and he said, oh, is that I have a dream Negro? And he used the other word. I said, what? I said, what did you say? And he said, yeah, is that I have a dream N-word? And I was like, come on, brother, are you serious? And that's when it brought it to light. He had no knowledge of himself. He had no knowledge of his history. He had no knowledge, real knowledge, of even who Dr. King was. So to him, he was just another man. He was just another black man who really had no significance in his life because he hadn't been taught. And so I was just like, wow, it's a sad state of affairs when, you know, you hear Dr. King being referred to as that I have a dream N-word. You know what I mean? That's the problem.
Yeah, there is. There's exactly a good example of the value system that we allowed to germinate throughout our culture. And the value of someone as important as Dr. King and many others have no significance to the youth. So therefore, it gives them no self-identity, no self-worth, no pride. And that's where we're losing it, in the grade schools and at home. When there's no person there to teach the children, then the streets, as you mentioned, teach the children. And what they teach the children is something that is very temporal. It has no real value. Kids turn around and their educational processes are cut short. Their family lives are not included, and therefore the value system has no meaning, and they learn however they learn, and that's the problem that we have, and
exactly.
That's that's why I say that it all starts at the home. Now, there are a lot of gallant women out there teaching their children. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of gallant women out there doing the best they can, doing by themselves out there. And I'm really proud of them, the sisters and the brothers, because there's a lot of brothers out there that are single parents in this country as well. But we have to come together as a family. The black men have to put their pride and their egos aside, because the music that they're listening to has taken the respect away from each other. The black woman has been called every name except for what she is. She's a queen. She's a leader. Now she's a father. She's so many things, and those things weigh heavy on a woman. And we need to go back and get our women. We need to reclaim our women. We need to reclaim ourselves first as men. And we need to elevate ourselves emotionally, spiritually, economically. And we need to go get our women and love them. We need to do that. That's so the most important thing that we could do is reunite with our women, to give them hope and give them a sense of security that many of them never had. And I'm from a broken family myself, and I understand. But my mother remarried, and God bless her for that. But I did have a father in the household. But so many children don't have the luxury of having a father. Somebody, and when I say father, I'm not talking about somebody that comes in and tell them to listen to this type of music or give them this basic street knowledge. I'm talking about a father that gives them a well-rounded view of themselves. And yeah, that's what we have to do as men. We have to get away from this egotistic, self-centered attitude, and the women have to do the same. We have to have a renaissance of ourselves, for ourselves. That's important. One day, that is something that we all have to face. And that's what I see, my brothers. I'm sorry, but there's so much need to be said on this subject.
Sorry for what?
I don't want to make people feel that I'm trying to preach to them, but the fact of the matter is, someone needs to communicate with our culture and to bring our culture back to itself. And that's where we can win the war. But because no man, I'm not looking for another culture to tell me who I am. We must look to ourselves.
Oh, no question.
Nobody can save us but ourselves, brother.
No question. And that's what I asked. I asked my brother today, one of my brothers I was talking to. I said, who is our black prominent leader in today's society? Who? I said, who is it? I said, I couldn't name him. I couldn't say Jesse. I couldn't say Al Sharpton.
No.
I was like, who could you say? And I was like, man, that's a sad state of affairs, because we used to have those brothers in our society that were, you know, accessible, that you knew who they were, and now you don't.
You're right, and that's a sad state of affairs, because, you see, this society did not allow us to germinate within ourselves. And that's the real problem. When Martin was taken out, and Malcolm was taken out, and Medgar was taken out, and so many other black people, black men that had a voice to give their own people. For instance, the gentleman back in the 30s, we were trying to go back to Africa, and that failed because nobody took it. So many times we have leaders, but they were taken away from us. So we have to get into ourselves. We have to be strong enough as men to accept the responsibility of the family and accept the responsibility of the self. Those are the things that we have to do. And then go, and then the woman will respect us.
But I mean, we can't respect us. We have to do some things to ourselves as men. And there's been so many brothers trying to lead us down this road. But this generation has so much and thinks so little of itself that it's damning our future.
Why do you think that is? They think so little of themselves. I believe it's because they have no knowledge of themselves. So therefore, how can you think about something you don't know anything about?
That's right.
And the other
part
is
that's a fact.
If you talk to a Mexican brother, Mexican brothers will go all the way back to the Aztec. They'll talk about Aztec. They'll tell you about some of their prominent, you know, prominent states in Mexico that they're so very proud of, and they have, and they know their last name, where their last name, where their people originated from. If they have Hernandez, they know what part of Mexico the Hernandez family came from. If you have a Rodriguez, they know where that came. Now, my last name is Mitchell. That's not no African name. If I go back, it goes back to some plantation owner's name. It ain't. It's not. That's not my name. That's not who I am. So
that was done by design.
Well, that's
exactly.
That's the
slavery
problem. You see. Yes, gentlemen, you guys hit it so right on the head. Our history was intentionally severed from our homeland, from our motherland, from the tribal history that we had. Our language was taken. Languages, our belief system was changed. And the sad part about it was that we, as people, bought into it instead of maintaining, such as the Jews did, such as the Italians did, such as the Mexican people have done, such as many other cultures. We have been changed, and that turns self against self, because self doesn't know who self is. So what we have to do, we have to regenerate the self. We have to connect to something. Everybody says, oh, well, I'm an American. Your heritage, for sure, is that you were born here in this country. But your culture was somewhere else. Now, you have to either accept it as a fact that this country has taken your culture, and you have to reclaim yourself, whatever that self is. It doesn't really matter. And we as men must accept that fact. And I don't know if we're strong enough to accept that fact. We get so caught up with so many other things to become selfish instead of becoming selfless. In other words, We don't need the issue of being segregated. We don't need those things. We need a group. We need self-help. We need all the help that we can give each other, like we're doing tonight. And I'm really proud of you gentlemen, being that you've come together to live as a team and to give some wisdom and enlightenment to your people. That's so very important, and I'm very proud of that.
I agree. We have about a minute left.
We have about a minute left. And we've been blessed with the forum to be able to, you know, speak about a issue that is so very prominent in our culture. And, you know, I wish I had all the answers. I really do. I wish I had all the answers, but I know for a fact one of the major problems is whenever you refer to a black person as African, you know, they take a negative connotation from that. Because when they think of African, they think of, you know, loincloth, no shoes, no shirt. You know, you walk around with a spear, you know, that's what has been portrayed. So there's such a negative connotation when you say African to most black people. And so when you say, you are African American, they know, they'll be quick to tell you that their roots are from South America. But where did those black people come from? I'm like, where did they come from? They came from Africa, the slave trade, brother. So don't get it twisted. Your heritage is rich. Africa's the birthplace of man. The first great civilizations have come from Africa. But you're not taught that in American history. So you don't know anything about that. So when they say Africa, you think of what? All the horrible diseases. You know, you think of famine. You don't think about all the richness that's over there that the Dutch people have taken. It's really hard for black people to grab that whole concept because they have made it such a negative thing.
Excuse me,
guys. That's true. It's all in education. And that's why I said the first movement in order to reclaim the self is to go to the educational system and the family, the home, where it all started and where it should end, where we should regenerate the family and to get to regain the respect of our people, our women, as leaders in our communities, and not guys just hanging out on the corners doing anything that is not promoting prominence and productivity to our community. Those are the things that what we have to do. One of the things that's really important is what you've just mentioned, education, family, self, being that we are a part of a society that says we're not valued, we need to reclaim our own value. We need to preach that to our families, our own women, our own sons, our own daughters, and do it and live it, not talk about it. Live it. Live that. Give the love and the understanding and the respect to our children, our family, our community, instead of going on the corners and selling the drugs that need not be put into our community, should never have been put in our community. And now we have the resulting is that those who fall for nothing will fall for anything. And there's so many things that we're falling for that are adverse to our society and our culture and our family. We must turn that around. We must educate. We must educate by example. You guys, you gentlemen are the product of good families. You're trying to do something good for your family and your community. And that's very noble. Very noble. And we are noble men.
I definitely appreciate it, brother. I'm just a speck, you know, and if I can be used as a vessel to help, you know, my brothers and sisters out, you know, to gain some knowledge of self and bring some things to the light, then, you know, I'll do that with all my being, you know, as long as I can. As long as I have breath in my body, I will definitely continue to do that because that's what's needed. And we need more of us to do that. We definitely need more of us, more in me, more of us that, you know, a lot of our older brothers and sisters are being valued and looked upon as vessels of knowledge that can spread the knowledge. And so a lot of young people, unfortunately, our value system is so screwed up. And it's, you know, the value is now in you know, how many chains you got around your neck, what kind of car you driving, you know, how many women you have, you know, how much money is in your wallet, you know what I mean, that sort of thing. And as long as it's, you know, it's monetary, and, you know, as long as it's that, and it's all about the stuff and not what's within you. Because there's nothing wrong with having nice things, but, you know, when that becomes your value system, you know, you don't hear about the family. You don't hear anybody rapping about the black family. You know, we used to have conscious rap. That's why I love, you know, brothers like Chuck D. You know, when you had, you know, those brothers out there, you know, Flavor Flav, you know, and Professor X, and, you know, all these brothers that were out there, you know, spreading that conscious rap, and that, you know, brought a lot of subjects to light. Because this is nothing new, what's going on. Those brothers made it. Public Enemy, you know, Public Enemy was one of the, you know, real conscious groups, you know, that brought it. But I remember, you know, I had a brother that's in the industry, Big Slice, that had told me, he said in a big meeting about 8 years ago, and he said, there's going to be a change in the music. They don't want, you know, conscious rap anymore. They don't want music with real content. They just want party music. And so since they want, that's what they want, you know, the people that can control the music, that's what they're going to do. And so they're gonna stop all that. And so he said, I don't know where the music is gonna go, what direction it's gonna go, but sure enough, happened. Everything he said was gonna happened. And you know, it's young people have no idea. You ask them, you know, I'm like, name a rapper, today's rapper, that is conscious, that talks about anything of value. Name one. And they can't even they'll say something, pull somebody out of their tail, like they'll say something like maybe Drake. And I said, the only one that I know of that's new is J. Cole, that talks about anything, and Kendrick Lamar. Those two young brothers definitely keep it conscious. But, you know, anybody else, I don't hear it. I don't hear that type of, you know, music that we used to hear in the 80s. You know, I don't hear it any longer. You know, it's gone. No one's talking about it. And so the young people are just talking about what kind of car you can drive and how much money you can make and how many diamonds, how much ice you got. You know, that's the value. So,
well,
you know,
you're right. And that's the problem. That you see, the music industry, again, we also always circle back to the music industry. Here we go. In the 60s, we were allowed to have We're a Winner, Curtis Mayfield. Say It Loud,
yeah.
I'm Black and I'm Proud, James Brown. We can go on and on in the early part of our culture in the 60s to give examples of conscious music that were about something, education, through the music. Now, the only thing you're getting is the word be. And see, I've been around the industry quite a long time. I first kicked in the industry by accident. I'm talking about the hip-hop and rap industry. I got a call.
Excuse me, gentlemen. You guys do know we're off the air, right?
Yeah.
That's okay. I got a call from... It's okay.
And
I got a call from
my
cousin, and I wound up working with Too Short. It was Girl, That's What Your Life, Smoking That Glass Pipe. That was my first mix. I mixed for Dean Hodges and 75 Girls Records and Too Short. That was his first clean rap that he got on radio. Okay, and that was 84. And I've been around this business, the music business, since I was a kid. But overall, it was all about trying to relate to people. I also then worked with actually, I founded, I'm the co-founder of the Digital Underground with Jimmy Dright and Shock G and Money B and DJ Fuse and them cats.
Right, right.
That was my first real record deal that I had with Tommy Boy Records in 1986.
When he didn't show up today, it worked. And then the other person, Ricky, the one I was telling you about, the Belizean guy, he, you know, because I had called, he knew something was up, and I called him, I said, he said, wait a minute, why are you doing your calls with me? I didn't go on the field with you. No, you know, you call around, you drop on me on the field with you, because you hit the field. I said, well, I've never showed up. He said, are you fucking serious? I said, I swear to God. I told him which Walmart I was sent to. It was the Cerritos one. And he's like, that's fucked up. He's like, you're not supposed to be in Walmart by yourself until you've made it to leadership. You know what I mean? And I told him, well, I stole one. He said, that says a lot about you. You know what I mean? And I would have had two, but I'm not going to fix that shit tomorrow with Luke. Give him that Walmart debit card. I'm going to put that $20 on it. We're going to pay that one time fee. You know what I mean? And I bet he's going to take care of the rest. I got the other lady coming through for tomorrow aiming to make the refill. But him was your fight. That actually says a lot about you that you went out there and you stayed. You know what I mean? Even though you're a new hire. Because you never seen new hires by they fuck yourself. Especially when you know you're not leadership.
Mm-hmm. You okay?
I'm great. That's rough. What was this stuff?
Gentlemen, I've really truly enjoyed speaking and experiencing your knowledge, your wisdom, and your lifestyles. I really have. I'm really proud, and if there's anything I can do, I'd love to be a part of anything, any way I can be assistance and to help my community, my people. I'd love to be a part of it.
Appreciate you, brother. Appreciate you. I haven't had this much positive dialogue in a long while, so I really appreciate the conversation. You know, let's not let it be the last.
Oh no,
sure.
No! I'm all in. I've been doing shock for almost since 1998, 97.
Oh, okay.
95. Was it 95?
Yes, sir. This is beef, man. My name is Beef. So whenever you know you want to, you know, chop it up, but I'm always gonna let me.
Beef gonna be part of that
camp.
We gonna be
Yeah.
So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
He's a comedian, huh? What's that?
Okay. Well, listen, gentlemen, I've got to take off. But you, Shock, you know how to get me. And in fact, I'm probably going to try to see you this weekend, Shock, for sure. We got that show on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
You gonna show
make it?
Oh, I think
the jazz show on Saturday.
Yep.
Oh my goodness, who is that?
Yeah,
the range.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You tell her I like that. You tell her I like that. I don't care who she is. You tell her I like that.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I like that.
He has a beautiful voice.
Oh, yeah. That's why I ain't letting her go.
Thanks. Well, I got to go too, Shock. And John,
right,
it was real.
Up, guys.
I'm going to hit you up, man. I might want to get out there and talk.
I'll call you in a bit, Shock. Thank you so much, bro. I appreciate you. I really do. It was a pleasure meeting you. Game show, we're going to keep it going. We're going to keep it going. We're going to keep it going.
So let's talk about me and Ron. Let's talk about doing this Black Forum in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
and sit down and have a table and talk. Okay?
Okay, let's do that.
All right, you'll call me tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, brother.